Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond.
Thank you for tuning in to The Pure Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I am Chantel C. You can call me CC. And I'm joined by my partner in organizing, who also has the bubonic plague, Denise.
What's up? What's up? I am patient zero in a zombie apocalypse. Let's get it popping.
So for those of you who follow us, you might remember that Denise was in London.
Yes, I was. Yes. And yep. And that's where I caught it. It was like a 28 days later scenario. Now I'm infecting mainland Europe. That's what's going on.
Well, at least you didn't. You skipped all the fever part that I had. You just got the scratchiness in the back.
I don't know if I skipped the fever part because my nurse, the person who takes care of me the most, is my 9-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And his methodology is suspect. super suspect. Yesterday, he's like, I'm going to take your temperature. And like puts it in his mouth and then tries to put it in. I was like, what's happening? What kind of hospital is this? What parts of this?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm glad we could laugh before we kick off this show because there's so much nonsense in the world. I'm going to start with the thing that people thought we should be laughing about. 27 questions Black people have for Black people.
That was a great piece of art. That was a great piece of performance.
Or was it 27 questions white people have for Black people but are too afraid to ask Black people, so they gonna make Black people ask the questions and make it seem like Black people got these questions? Or was it?
I don't know if that's how things work at BuzzFeed, right? Like, I know they had a writer for that, and I know that the writing team was predominantly white, but they had 20, you know,
or not, maybe it was 27 questions the new Negro has for the pro-Black revolutionists. Maybe that's what it was.
It wasn't even a pro-Black revolutionist because is a pro-Black revolutionist prefer, you know, colorist? Also preferring light skin over dark skin. It really was a restating of microaggressions.
The new Negro is who I was talking about. You know, okay. I said the new Negro is asking a question.
Okay. New Negro.
You know,
all right.
You know, so, people, I mean, like Common, so clearly, who win Oscars and say, can we all
Black
just get along?
Is a massive burden for these folks, right? Like, I'm not going to take away their agency in this video. I feel like if you working at BuzzFeed, you make 28 videos a month or some shit, you have some level of agency to be like, I ain't gonna say that on camera. Come on now, that don't make no damn sense. Like,
the strap line
is CBS.
The strap line is, I love Black folks, but that doesn't mean I don't have questions. And the name on it is Daisha Adewi. So Daisha Adewi thought she was going to have Black folks who were staff or whatever they are at BuzzFeed ask these questions, and NPR code switch. There were a lot of responses, obviously. There was Black Twitter responded immediately and furiously. Mm-hmm. A lot of Black media outlets did as well, but I feel like NPR code switch, one of my favorite outlets, did it the best. They actually took the time to answer these dumbass questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the first question was, why is it so hard to be on time? I didn't realize that was a Black thing. But okay, this is the one that's meant to be funny. If my dab is on fleek, am I lit? I feel like if you ask that question in that way, you might not know what any of those things mean. Just a proposition. Why is it a problem if I like anime? Considering Ta-Nehisi Coates just published Black Panther and all 300 copies sold out. They're
was
already
it
on second
or 300,000? Okay. So 300,000? I doubt it was just 300.
No, it was 300,000.
300,000. That's right.
Sold out. They're already on second print.
Mm.
Just dropped, right? But, you know, okay, asking questions. Why do Black people look at your shoes before they greet you? What?
I mean, all of these questions are racist, right? Like, so all of these questions are racist microaggressions coming out of the mouth of Black folks to try and justify them. So they're like all, you know, they bring Carson. They're like a younger version of him. They're just trying their best to seem unique. I mean, I think that's the thing here is that when you put all of them together, it paints a picture of someone who almost like they sit apart from the group and they say, I'm so different because I like anime and I'm on time and I'm XYZ.
Right.
And so it's a just a blatant ploy for white approval. And if these people actually took the time to actually have Black people in their lives, they'd understand that tons of people are Black people are on time, love anime, are not really interested at all in your shoes, may not even know what Ubonics terms are or mean, maybe more interested in punk than hip hop. I mean, like, all these things are so mainstream in Black culture, but each one of these Black people are going out there and pretending like they're a special snowflake because white approval. And it's sad. It's really, really sad. Like,
but how that's do you even get away with something like that when there are like whole Twitter accounts dedicated Black girl nerds, Black girl geeks? Like,
right.
What are you even talking about right now?
I have no clue. There's Afropunk. I mean, like, what are you talking
about? Yeah, you know? Okay, so I just had to bring it up. I honestly don't understand what they thought they were doing. It's called a BuzzFeed buzz fail. The thing is, like, some of the people in the video I do recognize from other videos where I recall them doing actually something pretty decent. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit disappointing.
Well, I think it's really hard to, you know, if you're supposed to go on and ask three questions, it's hard to know. And that's your job, right? Like, so you roll up, you're like, well, what do I say? You say these three things. You don't really know what the, you know, what the combined effect is going to be. I don't know if they saw the entire script and was like, absolutely, all of us, the entire posse, 100% back this. Or if they came up, they did their part, rolled out, and then just kind of like held their head in the morning, like, what the fuck? The entirety of it. Because that happens a lot. You know, you do your piece and then it's edited and it's combined with other things to make it seem like you're like a shucking and jiving, you know, a good time tap dancing for the people. You know, I mean, like, that's basically what they look like, a modern day version of that. So nobody, you know, I mean, like, if you want to be so special and not Black, just go be special and not Black.
Well, let me tell you who has the answer for you. Her name is Rachel Dolezal. Mm-hmm. She has signed a publishing deal to write a book on race. Imagine that. Imagine that. Dolezal still says that she identifies as Black.
It'll make money for her. She got to stick to the con.
Quote, I mean that not in the sense of having some easy way out. This has been a lifelong journey. This is not something that I cash in, cash out, change up, do at a convenience level, or to freak people out, or to make people happy. If somebody asked me how I identify as Black. Nothing about whiteness describes who I am.
And let Rachel catch a case. She's going to be white as the driven snow.
Everything about her describes whiteness.
Including her white parents, I'm sure.
Her white parents describes her whiteness. The fact that she thinks she can identify as Black, whiteness. The fact that she calls it a lifelong journey. Guess what, girl? I was Black before I came out the womb. That's your whiteness. The privilege of actually getting a book deal out of all of this nonsense.
For being a con artist.
Whiteness. Tell me how she believes nothing about whiteness describes who she is. I'd love to know it. But she thinks
she's peak white girl, right? Peak white girl is like this tremendous sense of entitlement. This I could do anything, even be you, even appropriate your culture, even, you know, whatever. And I, you know, it's all about my personal journey. It's really not about any kind of like societal, systematic systems of oppression that are historically based and that I was born into on the side of privilege. It has nothing to do with that. This is everything that happens and that I do is really about my special snowflakeness and how I, you know, am one with the universe and the universe taking me on a special journey that is personalized for me. And that is what Rachel Dolezal personifies. She's peak white girl. I mean, like, in her attempt to be Black, she has exemplified some of the whitest shit I have ever seen. If you know, if a Black person did this kind of long con, they might be prosecuted for lying on job applications and shit like that. We're criminalized for the most ridiculous shit.
Right.
You know, for, you know, crossing the street in a crowd of white folks, they will pick us out and be like, you're jaywalking. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what Blackness really is. Whiteness is, you get a pass, boo. You doing you and you got a book deal.
Right. So she thinks that her book is about to revolutionize the game. Sure. She said, quote, race didn't create racism, but racism created race. End quote. Ooh, that's deep. That's deep, Dolezal. We hadn't heard that one before.
Not deep at all.
We hadn't heard that one before. And her book is going to be about...
I'm colorblind, but I'm Black. Okay.
Her book is going to be about people who are somehow caught between boundary lines of race or culture or ethnicity.
And I know there are some mixed race authors that are just boiling with hatred for this bitch. Like, what the hell? I've been doing this work since whatever. You know, we know a woman who is Irish and Black who's been doing this work. She's been featured in The Guardian. As far as I know, she don't got a big deal. It's what she studied. She's getting a PhD on this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is her life, right? She is a Black Irish woman, and this is her life. And Rachel Dolezal got a book deal for this nonsense con that she's been doing. So ridiculous.
But isn't it possible, Denise? Is it not possible to be transracial?
No. First of all, transracial, just let me do a slight correction here. Transracial refers to a community of people that are one race that are adopted by parents of another race. That is called transracial adoption. So we cannot use that word with regard to people's foolishness around their confusion around their own race. We cannot use that word for that. Transracial, it means something already. It meant something very specific for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, No. Because here's the deal. The thing that happens with non-white people is we don't get choice. Very few of us do. There are a few non-white people that are white passing that can move in the world however they choose to move.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us, and even then it's limited, right? Because your family's Black. So
your family's Black or your name is coming up.
Exactly. Or, right. All that stuff, you're outed. But at the end of the day, most of us that are non-white do not have the opportunity to move in the world in the other way. So if you want to talk about peak privilege, it's about I can go this way. There is not one Black person that can wake up tomorrow and be like, yeah, I'm going to be white. I'm going to get that home loan. I'm going to get that job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to be followed around anymore. That's not going to happen. And to be real, I don't really think, well, you know, she makes a big deal about passing. I think people were being generous. I don't even think that people see her as, even when before her name was a big name and everyone knew her face, I don't even think people ID'd her as some Black woman,
mm-hmm.
right? You see her from across, I'm nearsighted. Not that, it's a slight stigmatism, okay?
Uh-huh.
And if I see Rachel Dolezal from, you know, two blocks away and I'm a cop, I ain't checking for her. I'm not. Cops will be lying for a dark-skinned Black person. That's just the reality of it. That's statistically proven.
Well,
so being welcome in a community of Black folks does not, you know, I have, you know, proven the Blackness in all fronts mean. There's this absolutely, because Black folks, as we know, are super hyper, hyper, hyper generous. We have so many light-skinned people within our midst. I mean, look at Sean King.
Right.
You know? And, you know, as a matter of fact, Black people, from his life story, Black people have sought him out and been like, look, I don't know what your mama's telling you, but there's something going on up in here.
Right.
Like, why don't you come? Why don't you come hang? You know, whatever, whatever, whatever. Black people are so generous. We've had to be. We live in America with a one-drop rule. That's how it goes down. We can't just cast aside the one-drop people. And Rachel Dolezal just made it so hard for them. So fucking hard.
Thank you, Rachel.
I bet she got 27 questions for Black people.
Oh, you know? That should be the next BuzzFeed.
Right.
Ask Rachel. Rachel answers.
Right. 27 questions that Rachel Dolezal is going to answer about Black people. Or 27 questions that she has for Black people. Like, how do you make potato salad?
Stop it. So, in other news this week, someone who wooed us and sang for us, and we loved her. La Portia Renee.
It can't just be Portia. It's Portia.
You know, she's from Mississippi.
She jazzercised that name. She massaged that name until the Blackness came out. She was just like, what, Portia? No. Is it really Portia?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm just making jokes.
Okay.
Portia Renee, mm-hmm. who many of us saw for the first time with her big fro singing on American Idol.
Right.
She didn't win and the judges were appalled, but she was the runner up. So who cares? She was interviewed and, you know, was giving her thoughts on this, that, and the other. And for whatever reason, because an American Idol runner up needs to talk about politics, she was asked about the bill that just recently passed in her home state of Mississippi, Religious Liberty Bill 1523, which will allow businesses, individuals, and religiously affiliated organizations to deny service to LGBT people, as well as any other group. So let's not forget that. As well as any other group that manages to offend.
What we meant by that was Muslims.
Right. That manages to offend their, quote, sincerely held religious belief, end quote. So.
It might could mean Black people because they're going way back.
You know? Hey, you know. Okay, let's stop. So LaPortia then, for whatever reason, decides to also answer this question and states, quote, "This is how I feel about the LGBT community. They are people just like us. They are not animals, as someone stated before. They're people with feelings. Although all of us may not agree with that particular lifestyle for religious reasons, whatever the reason is, you still treat each other with respect. Everybody's a human being. We should be able to coexist with one another." End quote.
What is controversial about that quote? Because people may not agree with the lifestyle?
Right. So I feel she answered that. She answered that pretty well. She's like an American Idol contestant. Let's just keep it real. She was in an interview meant to be talking about singing. And of course, because she's from Mississippi, has to now talk about this nonsense happening.
I feel like that's as progressive as a Christian woman from Mississippi could get.
And all she said was she wasn't brought up that way. She wasn't. That's not how she was raised. OK, but that's a lot of people. Right. So for her to still say we're all people, we all have feelings, we should just try to be able to coexist and respect one another. What's the big deal? So no. LGBT community came for her, as they do, and said, it's not a lifestyle, it's not a choice, and it's not.
We don't really, I mean, I feel, you know, first of all, I am the last to talk about, like, you know, the PC police or whatever they want to talk about. But at the end of the day, like, we don't cultivate clear potential allies at all because they feel so alienated if they don't get it 100% right. Who the hell is LaPortia? She is a heterosexual woman with baby daddy drama who can sing, who doesn't really have, you know, the highest level of educational achievement and is just doing the best she can. And it's from Mississippi.
Right.
And grew up Christian and is saying, look, we should be treating gay people with respect. So she used the word lifestyle in a way that that's not a term that we use to describe who we are and how we live. Okay. Tell her
that.
But why has it got to be like, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater? What is this kind of vitriol? Do you know what I mean? Like the level of vitriol that comes is just really ridiculous. And then not only that, but we also live in kind of a clickbait time. So you reading the whole quote was so helpful for me because from the queer blogs, you know, just the headlines were like, LaPortia may not agree with the homosexual lifestyle. I thought she was going to be like, and burn in hell, H-E-L-L. That's what I expected you to be quoting LaPortia saying. I was like, what?
That's
what the hell are they talking about? She may not agree. So her word usage, in this case, using the word lifestyle, is throwing everybody the fuck off. It's so bullshit, you know?
So after all of the backlash, LaPortia initially did try to defend what she said, understandably, on Twitter. But then, you know, it was so much that she did eventually say, quote, I tried to be as open and honest and neutral as possible, but that's the way interviews go. Sometimes when you do interviews, it gets twisted up. I can understand when I read it back why people were offended, and for that, I deeply apologize. I wasn't trying to offend anyone. I was just trying to honestly answer a question that caught me off guard. End quote. Well, thank you, LaPortia, because you handled it, in my opinion, pretty well. Most people get defensive, you know, dig their heels in, then some shit comes out.
Yeah, but what world do they even live in that people don't get things a little bit wrong that they're unfamiliar with? It's it's really annoying that that becomes a thing. Someone who, you know, look, if I started asking someone about, I don't know, coding or engineering or mechanics, and they know nothing about it, they'd be calling things a transmission that's really the carburetor. They'd be calling, I mean, you understand what I mean? And I can't just like, okay. Okay, you got no respect for the art of the mechanics. I mean, that's ridiculous. I live in Europe where people say all kinds of crazy stuff out their mouth because they have never encountered someone like me and have never been called on it and had never had need to actually use a word.
Right.
For example, you know, we know white people that think, because they think in German, and so they think because people of color is a thing, they can use the word color. They shorten it up because their English is so great. It's like, no. You ain't gonna tell me. some color.
No, it actually, it depends on where you're from, because if you're speaking on Germans, people of color is not where they're getting the color part from. Calling someone colored was actually a thing for a very long time. And some people will still say it today.
Right. And it's some bullshit. And it's in part, they will still say it today because they don't even have opportunity to say it that much. And when they do, they may or may not be called on it. So, you know, I'll call someone on it once. Now, if they continue to say some shit that I have told them, that's a different issue. But, you know, I usually give people the benefit of the doubt and be like, all right, you know, but LaPortia, yeah, that was some fabricated nonsense right there. I thought she was going to hit me with the burn in hell. I thought, like, I seriously thought she was going to hit me with some, like, real controversy.
No, not at all. That's why I thought it was important to mention. I feel a little bad for her, but you know, these things happen. I hope someone pulls her aside and says, LaPortia, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You're doing all right.
Mm-hmm. And we'll tell her. We're going to tag her in this joint.
We'll tag her and be like, hey, LaPortia, we still like you. It's all right. And in our second segment, so many things happening this week. Who knows where to begin? I'd like to start with some things that could potentially end well. First of all, Black people who suffer discrimination and abuse are calling people out on it quite publicly. It's getting a great deal of attention, and they're taking it to court. So first we had Cree Bala. I hope that I'm not like completely messing up her name. She was an employee at Zara's at a Toronto store, and says she was sent home because of her braids. The same type of hairstyle that people like Kim Kardashian and Marc Jacobs models get put on like New York Times articles for, calling it like a revolution of hair.
Yeah.
They got some edges.
Look, so if Zara had a runway show, they probably would feature a model with braids. I mean, like, that's just
like the braids she has. Yes. Mm-hmm. She said they took her outside of the store and they told her that they weren't trying to offend her, but they wanted her to have a clean professional look. And the hairstyle that she was wearing, her braids, was not a look for Zara. The managers asked her to take her hair out of the bun and went as far as to put their hands.
Oh, sorrow. No, they did not.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
and they probably the real crime here is that she's probably getting paid like $10 an hour
for the pleasure
of all this craziness.
It's not.
But
so a representative for the company, of course, said the company does not discriminate.
Sure not. Of course not.
And they're engaging directly with the employee on this matter. So I guess she is still employed. They're engaging directly with the employee because, you know, privacy, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. She has filed an official discrimination complaint with Human Resources Department. Mm-hmm. And she even said that she's likely to file one with the Ontario Human Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. Do it is all I can say. Don't back down. Don't believe anything they try to tell you in those private discussions.
Right. Not for no job at Zara. That's just not.
You have another job tomorrow.
Right. It's not that deep. There's some Pizza Hut hiring. It's all right.
But it's all too common, right? Like, mm-hmm. we hear about this all day, every day, that women with normal hair doing what they do, their hair is done. It's taken care of. It looks healthy. I mean, I see plenty of white women walk out. It looks like a bird's nest. Like they haven't brushed it. They just like got out the bed, put on some clothes and went, right? I've never seen a white woman be criticized for that. But anytime a Black woman, and we've spent so much time, like that should be said. We spend money and time doing all these beautiful things with our hair, and we still have to fight for the right to wear it naturally.
Girl, we ain't got no damn rights. I mean, look, this is why people get so annoyed when people like Rachel Dolezal appropriate shit and then want to call it their own. Because at the end of the day, this shit ain't a choice for us. And when it's on us, it has one value. But when it's on them, it's so cute.
It's so cute.
It's boxer braids.
Right.
It's wonderful. It's a trend, you know? Kylie's starting big lip trends. So, I mean, because when it's on a white body, you know, it has automatically more value than when it's on a Black body. Every single extension or orange spray tan or anything that Rachel puts on is only accepted or deemed beautiful because it's on a white body. Let me put on some orange spray tan. Let me put on some dollar store weave.
Let me ask you not to do any of those things in order to uphold this friendship, I just need...
I'm going to get me a dollar store weave I put in myself. I'm going to get me... It's horrible. And it wouldn't even be acceptable if it was on a black body. It's only acceptable because it's on her body.
Of course.
White women get away with all kinds of shit. So if a white girl showed up with braids in her hair, they'd be like, it's cute. Becky. That's like, it's giving me Little House on the Prairie. It's giving me Viking ancestors. It's giving me everything. I am absolutely not reminded of blackness at all. We created all this shit.
Well, in other lawsuit news, an NBA player for the Atlanta Hawks, Thabo Sefolosha, was charged with resisting arrest by the NYPD last year, a little over a year ago, outside of a club.
Cold popped him in the face. It was like, you resisting arrest?
As the police does, right? They're always good. That's what they yell in order, because they know they're about to commit a crime. So the police I feel like the police have almost been trained to say resisting arrest. So if anyone is recording, that has been stated, and they can, like, you know, have a reason for all the things that they're about to do. So what they do,
because video captured the entire encounter.
You know, they broke his ankle. They broke an NBA player. You know how highly prized sports athletes are in the States, professional athletes. They broke his ankle, forcing him to miss the NBA playoffs because apparently his right fibula was broken and ankle ligaments were torn, all due to this whole nonsense. That's deep for a professional athlete. You might not ever recover from that, for real.
Right, right.
So he denied a plea deal. That tells you everything.
Oh, no. He's like, I'm lawyered up and moneyed up. Come for me.
He denied the plea deal. He was acquitted by a jury of all charges after just 45 minutes of deliberating.
Now he is filing
a $50 million civil suit against the five NYPD officers who arrested him last April. Do it. He lost endorsements.
Yes.
They put his career in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. They falsified reports.
Yes, they did. Oh, God. And they do this every day with people who do not have $50 million contracts, right? I'm so glad that he's doing this. I'm so glad they caught the wrong one. I mean, I swear to God, if Obama was wearing a basketball cap and some jeans and a hoodie, they tackle his ass, too. I can't, you know. Having a black president does not change the fact that the police and the way that policing happens in the United States is based on a racist apparatus.
If anything, it's inflamed it. Because white people are mad every day they wake up and have to look at a black president.
So, I mean, like, look, Chicago pays out. They have a fund. Baltimore has a fund.
Yes, all of
right?
them.
Yep. New York has a fund of millions of dollars that they know they're going to pay for beating black folks' ass and killing black folks. They know that they're going to pay this money. This shit's in the budget, yo. But they rather spend that money on the descendants of the people they kill and maim than actually doing any kind of real reform. There was a study that just came out about the Chicago PD that said they had disdain for the life of people of color. Disdain. Mm. Not like, you know, just disregard, like not even like, like, the more we kill, the better for us. For us. So that's what they are. They are a racist posse that patrols the streets and hyper-surveils people of color. That's what they do. And so now these cities are going to have to actually pay out some money. I mean, they have been paying out money.
Oh, yes.
I think the payouts will get bigger, but they have been paying out money. And they destroy lives, you know? If a white person says, this person stole my pen, you can end up in Rikers Island indefinitely, right?
Right.
That's what happened to the 16-year-old boy. A white person said he stole a backpack. He didn't, you know, if they had done any due diligence, they would have found, not on any level, you know. And plus, it's a backpack. This cat ended up in Rikers Island for years.
Yes.
Awaiting trial because they are so backed up.
Well, on the other hand, while, you know, petty crimes are ending with people in jail, locked up, probably not even getting a public defender in some places like Louisiana, where they're out of public funding for them. We have, on the other hand, these things happening where victims are having to do the policing themselves. So there was an article that came out this week in The Guardian titled "The Women Abandoned to Their Online Abusers."
That's a great article.
It was a great article talking about how these people are facing harassment, death threats, racist abuse on social media sites, and the police are unable or unwilling or
definitely unwilling
to tackle the problem. And right. this is not limited to any particular place. The article covered England and Wales, Australia, San Francisco. So it's a universal right. thing.
It's universal. But it also has to do with the systematic misogyny that pervades policing, right? This has to do with the fact that rape kits often go destroyed without being tested.
Yes.
Or just completely forgotten. And you would think that an agency whose number one thing is preventing future criminals, the internet is a treasure trove mm-hmm. of information, because what you have on here is record of past behavior that before we didn't have. Like, so there was a situation in Seattle where a woman went on an internet date and ended up chopped up in a bag and killed. She left behind 3 kids. It's horrible. But you look back at this guy's past and his own parents took out a restraining order against him. But I bet if you look back in his internet past, you would find all manner of harassing behavior that he has done that you could use to present a profile. You could present profiles for terrorists, for pedophiles, for rapists, all kinds of stuff. So then, but they're not interested in solving crimes, right? What policing, what Michelle Alexander recently said in an interview was that the way that policing actually works in effect is as enforcement of a caste system. Mm-hmm. It's not about enforcing, trying to prevent crime. Right. And then if you take that together with what KRS-One said, where he said every race of people, every group of people has criminal element. Problem in America, I'm going to, extrapolate from what he said, is that in America, if you are the criminal element, but you happen to be moneyed and you happen to be white, you're allowed to actually run society. Mm-hmm. And if you're the criminal element and you happen to be a person of color, even if you're not a criminal element, you're hyper surveilled, you're locked up, whatever. So what ends up happening is that one race of hyper criminalized people end up having a tremendous outsized power. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a theory that holds weight if you look at how policing has evolved into kind of the enforcement of a caste system in the United States. And to be quite frank, across the world.
Right.
The issues, that's why Black Lives Matter is global. Mm-hmm. Aboriginal Lives Matter in Australia, mm-hmm. right? Black Lives Matter all throughout the UK. I mean, this is happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sometimes you sound like Mr. Roboto to me. Oh, Mr. Roboto. it really sounds like you're using like an iPhone app to like.
And in our third and final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
I want to tell y'all a story. I don't know what am I excited about? Well, okay, so May's coming up. Gosh, I just have 48 thoughts in 1 minute.
in like 10 seconds.
right. Okay, so I just want to say that last night I had the first meeting of Black people in Vienna.
Awesome. And how was it?
It was great. It was great. Like 30 people showed up.
Dope.
The group itself is like 350 people. Most of the people that show up know me personally, so I understand that there's a bunch of people that might be
shy. But that's a big number. 10% came?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's nice. Even people without Facebook came. It was just like, okay, that's nice. And we had it like in this like really dope restaurant that has like flavorful food, which is hard to find in Indiana. It was like an Asian place, I guess Chinese. And they had very flavorful food, great drinks, great service. It was an American waitress.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great.
Yeah. So she's from DC. And it's like, oh, I went to university in DC. And first thing out her mouth was like Connecticut Avenue, UDC. I was like, is that the first thing you think of when you think of DC?
That's not what I think of. But
okay. I was like, okay, so you put me at UDC? Mm. Okay. I got nothing but love for our fellow HBCU, our sister HBCU, but I went to Howard University. Okay, so that's what it is.
Let's bring down the you Howard people.
But yeah, we had a great time. Right, because I will start chanting. And I did not even pledge. But we had a great time. There was laughter. All this. It really went from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m.
So when's the next
one? Place down. So a lot of people were saying they want a monthly thing. And so I think we're going to do a monthly thing. I think that one of our challenges is that one person brought up, it would be great to support a black only a black owned business.
Right.
And I think that would be great also. You know, my stipulations are that it be, of course, in Vienna, and then close to one of the metro stops.
Right.
Non-smoking, and because it's right, people are supposed to be coming right after work. It needs to have not just drinks, but it has to have food also.
Right.
So that people can actually eat.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my only stipulations. But yeah, hopefully we can find a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
I, off the top of my head, sadly, I don't know places like that, but I'm new to this piece. Speaking of being new, mm-hmm. as you know, I'm working on this project called Black Austria, mm-hmm. where I do documentary interviews with Black Austrians. So I'm waiting to hear back from one funding association. And as soon as I hear back from them, I'll release it. Because as you know, the site's already made, whatever, whatever. And I was talking to someone about it. And I was like, and she was like, this exists, this exists, this exists. And I was like, that's great. I'd love to find out more about this. But just so we can be real, none of this exists online, right? Mm-hmm. So part of the way this project evolved was that I created it so that there could be an online archive of something about Black people in Austria. Right now, nothing exists. Mm-hmm. There's like an article from 2009. It's really bad. Like Google search is just going to lead you to like some police brutality incidents. And, you know, so there's no like first person accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, someone was saying to me, actually, it exists in my apartment. I'm very reluctant to put it online. And I was just like, that's not how I live my world, boo-boo. I was like, I'm not going to the library. I'm not going to your apartment. I mean, like, I'll go to your specific apartment because, you know, now I know this person.
Right.
But like, you know, someone that rolls up and is Black and in Vienna does not have the energy to start a group. Not all of us do not have the energy to start a group. Called Black People in Vienna that grows to hundreds of people and then have gatherings in their house and in other places until they meet all of the people that might have some game-changing information about the history of Black people in Austria. There's no way that people are going to put the kind of energy that I've put into this,
mm-hmm.
into this.
Right.
And that's why I'm putting it online.
Right.
Because when I tried, you know, when I was sitting back for the last like year and a half before I started this project, I sat down online and would Google thing periodically, and nothing would come up except, of course, the narrative from the police or the narrative from the aunt. And it was really problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Reluctance to put out your own story. And I will say this, I'm coming in as like this outsider, as this new person, but I'm also coming in with a radically different political perspective. Because, you know, in the States, we're all about creating our own narratives. Like, we understand that there's a multiplicity of narratives. So if I put out a website that's called, you know, Black Kingsters, that might not be everyone's story, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are people out there that are like Black abstainers that never, ever have sex until they get married. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. There's this diversity of opinion. But here, because there's so few Black people, there's this reluctance to put out any one narrative because there's this feeling that it has to be the all-encompassing, perfect, absolute great narrative. And it has prevented so much from happening. I have seen knowledge with people in here in Austria and in Germany that lives and dies with these people because they are afraid to put out a narrative that does not really lend itself to the diversity of all of the Black community in those countries. And what I have said is this, if white folks are going to pathologize you, they're going to pathologize you with any information they have. If I put out something saying, you know, Black people be walking on two legs and they breathe air and oxygen and stuff. Black people be like, you see, those are savage people. They're greedy. You see what I'm talking about? They're using up all the air. You know, there's a criminal element. You know, mm-hmm. they walk on two legs. They can run on two legs. I mean, like, it doesn't matter what I put out. If they're going to pathologize Blackness, they're going to pathologize Blackness. I cannot live my life imprisoned by the white gaze. So I just want to put that out there because I feel like there's a lot of projects out here that could be happening. When I see them happening, they happen by people that have not been surrounded by white people their entire lives,
mm-hmm.
and are less concerned by the white gaze, are not as concerned about like, ooh, if I put this out, what will white people think?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is something that I struggle to understand. I try to have compassion with it, but I really struggle to understand people that are basically imprisoning their brilliance, their knowledge, their talents, because they are afraid about how it will be received by the white gaze. So that's my week in a nutshell.
Well, thank you for asking. I am still excited about the fact that we got to meet Uzo Aduba this week after watching an outstanding performance in her role as Solange in The Maids. That's playing until May 21st at Trafalgar Studios. She was nothing but gracious and generous with her time and took after such a powerful performance and knowing that, you know, her voice needs to rest, her body needs to rest, taking all the time that she did to speak to the few of us who were at the stage door talking to her. So still very excited about that. Very much looking forward to.
She's a professional.
Yes, absolutely.
And she's gorgeous, y'all. I don't know if you know. But Uzo, I am in a relationship. CC over here is not in a relationship. Because one thing that she said to us both, which is a common misconception, was like, how y'all two, because I was like, I live in Vienna. She lives in London. And she was like, well, how y'all two make that work? And I was just like, because we travel. It's okay. But I'm not with her. We never had that go down.
It took me a minute. I didn't catch that she was like insinuating.
I didn't catch it.
Because I would have been like, no. Cool. Uzo, I got all the space and time.
Denise is not my girl. I don't even like her.
To bake you sweet potato pies and rub your back after every performance. What you need? God. I do it all.
Goodness.
I do it all.
All of it.
Hey. And then
I didn't mean to put a cramp in your game. I'm sorry. but I'm stating for the record that when CC rolls out, she is not cheating on me because we have never, ever known each other in a biblical sense. So I'm just putting that out there.
Oh, well, she said the biblical sense. Help us.
She my sister in the word. There we go.
There we go.
Let's make it happen.
I'm also looking forward to the fact that the wonderful, fun, quirky Black queer pop artist B. Steadwell arrived at London Heathrow today. She already threw me the note. She'll be performing on Sunday. And I've organized a meetup with my group for Monday where she will screen her film Vows of Silence and then do a little mini concert for us. On Sunday, I'll probably already see her though because there is a DIY fair going on called Hair Today, Here Tomorrow, where, you know, obviously some Grammy Graham products of Don't Touch My Hair will be on full display, along with a lot of other people, a lot of other stalls, a lot of workshops on just DIY Blackness, all of it. So B will be performing there as well with Asha. Don't let me forget Asha. I'm sorry, Asha, if you listen, I'm sorry. Asha, B's partner, but also an amazing musician, singer, songwriter, all of those things. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be a very promising weekend. Just to let everybody know, The Queer Truth will be off for the next two Fridays. Yes, you heard it. The next two Fridays, because myself, Cece, I'm a spiritual being and I will be offline, 100% offline at a meditation retreat for 10 days. I won't be thinking about any of you, but I'll love you when I get back. That's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today. So feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.